At this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, Danielle, from Ottawa, Canada.
Hi, everyone. My name is Danielle, and I'm a grateful recovering addict from Ottawa, Canada, a lovely city. Come and visit us sometime. So I get home one night, and I log on to my computer, and I get this email, and it said, from World Services, and I went, what's this? And it read, in part, we're writing to ask you if you're willing to be one of two workshop speakers at the Basic Text Phrases That Changed Me workshop. And I'd like to tell you that I was cool and calm, and I, you know, just said, oh, how lovely, but I went. And so this voice inside me said, find your basic text, Danielle. So, here it is. And there it was, easy to find, because right now I'm working with a special group back in Ottawa on a traditions group. And it's quite different, but really satisfying, you know? And I opened this basic text, and my first thought was, well, what phrases? So many have helped change me and helped me recover. And I got this basic text at New York Convention, Freedom. And look, you know, nice signatures inside, but as I leafed through it, I highlighted phrases in yellow. When I first worked the steps, and I went, look at that. God has given you the answer. Those are the phrases that you can share on. Thank you, God. I'll start by talking a little bit about myself. I am the oldest girl. We're a family living, as I said, in Ottawa, Canada. Very French. Very Catholic upbringing. And my dad was strict, mom very loving. And they sent me to school, and the school, the teachers were nuns, you know. And, you know, I think I was a really good little girl, but I liked to make others laugh. And one might have called me spirited. And you know, the other kids thought I was funny, but the nuns didn't get me. I think they thought I was a bit of a nuisance, you know. So the phrase that jumped out at me in the Why Are We Here is, in the beginning, using was fun. For us, using became a habit and finally was necessary for survival. I bet you most of us, we can say it was fun in the beginning. I lived in a Woodstock kind of world. It was peace and love and, you know, everything was free and the drugs were plentiful. And we used to go to rock concerts and just have so much fun. And music was very important to me and still is today. And this particular rock concert, like, was about to change my life significantly. I remember the date. It was October 3rd, 1970, and the band was Sly and the Family Stone. Do you remember Sly and the Family Stone? Does anyone remember 1970? I know you do, Dickie. Oh, yes. At this concert, I met a young man. And, oh my, he was handsome. And I fell in love. and we started to hang out, and he was popular, and he was a drug dealer. I mean, I thought, who is God it better than me, you know? And that first year when we were together, I remembered what the nuns had said to me, how you should stay pure until the wedding night. And so, you know, no, we can't. No, we shouldn't. But then one night, the passion kind of got the better of us. And that night, we made love. And that night, I got pregnant. I was so scared. I was a 17-year-old Catholic girl in a good home, and it was like, how will I tell my mom, my father? How will I tell my dad? So it came to a place where I just couldn't hide it anymore, and that morning I said, Mom, I need to talk to you. And I took her hands, and she went, oh, no. I said, Mommy, I'm pregnant. And she said, why does it always happen to the good girls? And I said, thank you, Mom. Will you tell Dad? Because, see, that's the role my mom had taken on, kind of representing me, because, you know, he was scared, my father. This Woodstock stuff, and the world was changing in front of their eyes for our parents, right? And so we had found a voice, and we were getting louder as teenagers and young adults. And the next few months were very, very hard for me, because I had made the decision that I would give up the baby for adoption, but how is it that you don't get attached to this little life growing inside you, you know? And so the night that I had the baby, a healthy baby boy on my father's birthday. And the night, you know, back then you stayed in the hospital almost a whole week, and that was hard too. All the other mothers would get their new babies, and, you know, I'd have to walk out of the room because it was hard for me. And when I left the hospital and left him behind, you know, a big part of my heart I left behind with him. And this you know how we say we used to live and live to use, you know? I liken this almost to like a light switch, where the light was turned on and then it got dimmer and dimmer as I used. But when I left the hospital, my using transformed and the light was switched off. And I was plunged into this darkness of shame and just loathing, maybe, and abuse of using, you know? And this lasted for the next 17 years. But along the way, I had a beautiful little girl, my little Natalie. But you know what? She deserved better. And she kind of had to come along for this ride and had no choice, you know? And then last night that I used, the police came to my home because the music was always so loud. I wasn't a very considerate neighbor, and I still liked rock and roll a lot. And they knocked on the door and they said, can we come in? It was about 2 in the morning. And I said, sure. I was so loaded, you know. And they found Natalie in her little bed and they said, there's problems here. Because they'd come a few times before and they record, document this. And they gave me a choice. They said, you either call your parents and have them come and get you right now, you and Natalie, or we're calling the children's aid and we're having them come and take your daughter away. I couldn't lose another child, you know. And the decision was a little hard for me because Dad and I had had a parting of ways, both willful, especially me, and I hadn't seen him in 8 years. But I chose my parents and said, call my mom, please. Mom was always the rescuer, and, you know. And they lived about 20 minutes away, and I heard, you know, up the stairs, and the door opened, and my dad came in. See, Dad was the kind of man, he couldn't say, I love you. He was raised with, you know, men just didn't show that kind of emotion. But seeing his face come through the door, he said he loved me in ways that words couldn't say, you know. And they took me to their home that night with Natalie, and Mom rocked me to sleep and said, it's okay. We'll find a way. We didn't lose Natalie. It's okay. And the next morning when she woke me up, 7 a.m., she said, will you come with me? I think I found us a solution. And I was ready. You know when you just have it. And I said, Mom, let's go. And she brought me to a detox. And I said, how do you know about a detox, Mom? She said, the police told me about that last night. God bless them, you know. And I was interviewed in Virginia, and it was determined that I needed help. And so off I went 2 days later to a place in New Hampshire called Spofford Hall. It was my birthday. 35 years old. And I somehow in my heart knew this was the greatest birthday gift I've ever been given. Well, I felt that way early in the morning anyway. But later that night, you know, I'm in this huge facility and I started to cry. What am I doing here? So I went into my room and I started to unpack. And I reached into my suitcase, and my daughter had hand-drawn me a birthday card. And it said, happy birthday, Mommy. I believe in you. So I put it where I could see it every day. Because for her, you know what? I could do that for her. I came back home after hearing the message of Narcotics Anonymous for the very, very first time. It was a member of H&I. He saved my life, you know. And I remember going to my first meeting, September 13th, 1989, being late, being nervous, and opening the door, and, you know, the smoke billowed out. And I went, N.A.? And someone said, yes, come in, take a seat. And I felt I wasn't alone pretty much right away. It was a really good experience for me. I started to make friends right away. I remembered what they had said at Spofford. You need to make a new circle of friends. And I befriended a gentleman, and he said, you know, we're all going to a Narcotics Anonymous convention in Montreal. Would you like to come? And I said, what's a Narcotics Anonymous convention? I had all of 53 days clean. And he said, oh, and he explained, he said, come, you'll see. And you know what? He's here today. Thank you, Bruce. I had so much fun. You know, I'm a bit of a social butterfly. And we French Canadians were very expressive. And so there was love and kissing and hugging and meetings. And I came home and thought, this was the best experience I've ever had. I think I want more of that. So I decided that, you know what? I made a conscious decision. I would go to more NA conventions. And so I was off and running. And I went to one more convention and then another. And this addict said about me, oh, Danielle, she's trying to make 90 conventions in 90 months. But the thing is, I I was always working on the outside, you know, always thinking I had to look good on the outside. And so when I arrived at these conventions, I had an awful lot of luggage. Someone in here can attest to that. And because I had to have a different outfit for every workshop, okay? And I put a great deal of thought into this. You know, for the opening meeting, like, I had to look happy and light. And for the banquet, oh my, I had to dress up and Mom would lend me her gowns. And for the Sunday meeting, the closing meeting was the spiritual meeting after all. I had to look spiritual. How do you look spiritual? But I tried, you know. And see, by working on the outside, I was never trying to fix what really needed fixing within. But the good news about going to all these conventions is that I met some wonderful addicts. Addicts that are still in my life today. And you know what? They helped me stay clean. Back then, you had to make an effort to stay in touch. There wasn't Facebook. There wasn't even voicemail. I had to, and I enjoyed doing it, write cards and letters to my friends. And I tried to remember everybody's birthday and everybody's clean date and found great joy in doing that, you know. It was at the New York convention that I mentioned that I met an addict by the name of Mark Kay. Mark Kay loved N.A. with a fervor. And he had been diagnosed with AIDS. And you know what? Back in 1992, a lot of people feared that. And when he invited me and my daughter, who then was 13, to come and visit him in New York, we went, oh my God, we'd love to do that. And he goes, oh, there's another thing I'd like for you to do, Danielle, while you're here. And I said, what is it, Mark? I'd like you to speak at my 10-year anniversary. And you know those voices right away where, well, I don't have enough to say, and I'm not good, you know. And I said, without thinking, Mark, my story isn't bad enough for New York. And he said, Danielle, your story is the worst because you lived the pain. And I went, okay. What an amazing trip we had. And he and Natalie formed their own friendship, which was wonderful. And he spoke at the Sunday meeting, spiritual meeting, and expressed, he got real, you know, about his disease. And said, I'm so afraid that when the time comes, I'll be alone on my deathbed. And I said a silent prayer to God and said, God, please help me be with Mark when that time comes. And you know what? You're never ready for that call. And that addict called me from New York and said, and I don't even know who she was, Mark isn't doing well, Danielle. If you want to see him, I'd suggest you come, you know. And I thought, how do I get there? I don't even drive. And how do I get to Brooklyn, New York? And I thought, you asked for help. So I called a dear friend, Roger C. from Philadelphia. You know him too. My little brother from another mother. And I said, Roger, things aren't good with Mark. He said, leave it in my hands. Just fly here and we'll drive there and see him. And when I got to that hospital room, you know, I found him so frail. And he fell into my arms. And he said, you've come so far to see me. And I'd asked the guys, we were four, to give me time alone with him. And I was able to take his hands and tell him what he'd done for me, how he helped me be a better woman. His friendship with Natalie was so important to her. And when the guys came back into the room, you know, we sat around his bed. And someone said, you know, Mark, how are you really? And he said, guys, I haven't been to an NA meeting in so long. So without saying a word, we just kind of had a moment of silence, opened it up with the Serenity Prayer. And that was one of the best NA meetings I've ever attended. I got home, and a few weeks later, when I was just a little baby, 4 weeks old, my mom had to go back to work because money was tight, you know, and she entrusted me in the care of this woman, Evelyn, and Evelyn had been struck with polio as a young girl, so her mobility was impaired, but her mind was sharp, you know. And she helped raise me, and she was the surrogate mother that I wish all of you could have had. She was just an amazing woman. But you know the kind of person that can never say no? And I'm afraid I took advantage of that many times over. And I was called, and well, she was in the hospital, and she too was on her deathbed. And I went to visit her, and it's hard saying goodbye to your best friend, you know? So I took her hand, and I said, Evelyn, I love you so much, but you know what? I think you loved me too much. And she looked me straight in the eye, and she said, you can never love too much. My shame is that I took advantage of that love over and over and over again, you know. So when I was left with all this loss, I thought, maybe it's time I start working the steps. So this book I opened, and that's when I started to highlight those passages. And I found a sponsor named Kathy, and she asked me, would you like to join our step group? I'm starting a new step group in my home, the Step Sisters. And I went, oh, yes. And you know, each step did so much for me, as I'm sure it did for all of you. But there were two steps in particular that helped change me. Steps 8 and 9. And what I found to be helpful in step 8, we forgive others, possibly we are forgiven, and finally, we forgive ourselves and learn to live in the world. By the time we reach this step, we have become ready to understand rather than to be understood. I had been carrying the guilt of giving away my baby boy for adoption for all these years, you know. And a counselor had suggested that I write him a letter. And I thought, that seems like an odd thing to do. And he said, trust me, Danielle. Write that letter just to get the feelings down on paper. And I, because I wanted to believe, I said, okay, I'll do that. And so this is what I wrote. September 8, 1989. My dear son, in a short while it will be your 17th birthday. I remember the night that you were born just like it was yesterday. There is so much that I would like to share with you, especially now that you are becoming a man. Perhaps you won't understand why it is that I had to give you up for adoption. Your father and I were truly in love. We were so young and had nothing but that love to offer you. Unfortunately, sometimes love just isn't enough to give when you have little else. You see, that was the hardest decision that I have ever taken in my life. I just wanted your complete and total happiness, so I put my feelings aside in hopes that you would have a better, more secure life. I want you to know that I have loved you from the minute I realized I was pregnant. I long to know what you look like. If you are happy, and I pray that you have had a good, healthy life, I entrusted you in the care of your adoptive parents with all the faith that they would take good care of you. In closing, I wish you the happiest of birthdays, and I pray God to keep you safe and content with your life. Your mother, Danielle. I finally forgave myself. I realized, no, that I hadn't been a bad person, and it took a great deal of courage to give away my son at that little young age of 18, you know? This phrase, as we realize our need to be forgiven, we tend to be more forgiving. I forgave my father for not being the father that I wanted him to be. I mentioned that we had had a parting of ways that lasted 8 long years while I was using. And when I got clean, you know what? Things got better. Things got better slowly, but they did. And it was exactly when I was writing my 8th step. And you know when you make your list, and it's suggested not to project, but I couldn't help. Oh my God, how am I going to make amends to my father, you know? My mom called me at work, and she was just in tears. And I said, Mom, what's wrong? And she said, Danielle, your dad is real sick. He's got Alzheimer's. And I said, okay. And I realized that this was my way of making amends. I showed up. Showed up for my mom. First thing I suggested that we do with she and I, we joined a support group for family members, you know. And it has done so much for her. And I would go with her because there's nothing like support. And when my dad would see me, the man that couldn't say he loved me, you know, the walls that he had built around him started to just kind of fall. And he would take me in his arms, and he would always be so happy to see me. And I love you so much. It was very hard to watch a man with so much courage, strength, and dignity basically lose his mind, you know? But he taught me to live in the moment. When I would arrive at the home, I brought him what I could in the moment. And as I say, he was always so happy to see me. And one time he said, who are you? I said, I'm your oldest daughter, Danielle. And he went, really? And I went, yes, the daughter that never caused you any trouble. Hey, but he knew. He kind of went, you know. At my 15-year anniversary, see, my daughter had had a hard time understanding this disease because who lived it worse than me but she, right? And even though it was like, yeah, you had a disease, right? So she became a mother. And she had children. And so she started to understand a little bit what it was like, that responsibility. And so what happened was at my 15 years, she gave me a gift. And she said, just bring it home, Mom, and open it when you get home. And I went, oh, okay. And I reached in and I said, oh, what's this? And she wrote me a letter. And in that letter, that's what she said. Mom, because I've become a parent, I understand now. I forgive you. And she signed it off, Mom, you are my hero. Oh. Today I have everything I could ever possibly want. And none of it is material. I have 2 grandchildren that are my little angels. Graydon, when he puts his arms around me and he says, I love you, Grandan. Our little Grace was born last September 13th, on Mark Kay's birthday, my friend Mark Kay, who is in heaven. She's got a guardian angel, you know. I have found the love of my life. He is my best friend. He is my soulmate. And you know what? On August 17th of this year, I came up with 22 years clean. Chris got 21 in July, but you know what else we got, everybody? We got 15 years together in Narcotics Anonymous. Huh? Thank you for that. I would like to suggest to the World Board that they might consider coming up with a new KTAC continuous relationship time in NA. Just a thought. Huh? This passage, as we see coincidences and miracles happening in our lives, acceptance becomes trust. I believe fervently that I'm always right where I'm supposed to be. And God has placed people in my life throughout to learn from, to be guided by. I have friends that I love so much. And you know what? I know love me back in return. And all they want from me is to be the best person I can be. The person that God wants me to be, and that's what I want for them. And if you're new today, we welcome you. This was written just for you in the basic text. It says, many books have been written about the nature of addiction. This book primarily concerns itself with the nature of recovery. If you are an addict and have found this book, please give yourself a break and read it. My name is Danielle. I'm an addict from Ottawa, Canada. Thank you very much.
I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Michael from North Carolina.
Hello, family. Addict named Michael. Truly blessed to be in this process of recovery. And first of all, I want to thank each and every one of y'all for getting me here. And for me to come from the belly of the beast to stand up here, it took each and every one of y'all. You know, I'm real grateful to be a member of this fellowship. I came here only wanting the pain to stop because I had lied to myself for so long, I didn't know how bad it was. You know, I hope everybody has their sixth edition basic text. Because when I was given this topic, it's like, okay, out of all the topics in the world they could have gave me, they don't give me this one. Because, see, one of the things I stopped doing, I stopped highlighting my text. So I had to go back and pull out my fifth edition. And, you know, it took me a long time to get over my resentment about the sixth edition. Because there was one thing in the fifth edition that I thought was so cool. If you take the first seven words and the last three words of the fifth edition basic text, it simply says, simplicity is the key. Work the steps. You read the first and the last, and you pretty much got the gist of everything in between. Because, see, I was always one of those people that was looking for that quick and easy way. You know, I'm so proud to be able to wear this pin here because I went to my first world convention, and I heard this was the person who had the most clean time then. I had to hunt him down. And I wasn't a very outgoing person, but I wanted to find out from the person who had been here the longest what was the easiest way to make this thing work. And he may have told the same message to millions and millions of people, but it was personal for me. He told me just to stick around. Because, see, I know a lot of us come in here looking for an excuse, looking for a reason to escape. You know, I'm here as a direct result of being a failure in more ways than one. I failed at drug using. And, you know, I always share about all the things I did in my active addiction that risked my life, all the ways I had tried to accidentally kill myself. I always share about the last 2 years of my active addiction, how being suicidal was a continuous thought. But what I had a real problem sharing about was the fact that I tried to commit suicide and failed. Because once again, I couldn't get it right. I was talking to a brother yesterday, and he was talking about the only things he ever done right was this. And I feel that. You know, we talk about the phrases. You know, I'm really a literature buff because, see, when I came around here, I wasn't willing to share anything about me to anybody. It's like, okay, if it's all in the book, I'm going to buy the books, and I'm going to study the books, and I'm going to get better. But the first series of phrases that got me, because I came here, I ended up in Narcotics Anonymous after coming out of my second consecutive institution. So jail institutions and death made a whole lot of sense to me. Like, if I don't stop doing what I'm doing, I know what's going to happen. And then the studying began. They talk about progressive, incurable, and fatal. Not chronic, progressive, and fatal. Incurable, progressive, and fatal. Like, okay, you keep switching this up, but you keep ending with fatal. I hated my life. I hated who I was. I've been thinking of suicide for so long and had even attempted and failed, but the bottom line was, I didn't want to die. I just could not stand to live that way one moment longer and had no clue of any way out. You know, I had heard about treatment. I had a friend who went to treatment every year, several times a year. So, you know, I had a real strong message from that. That stuff don't work. You know, one of the ironies is I get to work in that field today. And I tell them, it don't work. This works. This program is guaranteed to work. And there's more than one guarantee. I got it right here in black and white. See, I was one of those addicts who, you didn't put anything in writing, because I'm going to hold you to that. They talk about the best guarantee against the relapse of the 12 steps. You know, I love the steps dearly. A lot of times in our recovery, I find myself not wanting to talk about how many times I worked the steps because it seems to be socially unacceptable in a 12-step program to be working the 12 steps. But the 12 steps is the only thing that allowed me to finally figure out who I was and why I couldn't stand being that person and what I could do to change it. You know, phrases that changed me. This book, our phrases that changed me. I mean, there's a lot of things that highlight, there's a lot of things that tabbed, but I could pretty much turn to any page and find something. Because, see, once we put down the drugs, we find all those other things that are going on with us and all kinds of situations that happen in our lives. It's all about phrases that changed me. one of the main ones when I got here, see, one of the things I always did, I always had to use more. I always had to cop from the best spots. I always had to prove that I was better than or worse than. I had to come in here with some kind of status because I didn't want to be just a typical addict. And we get here and they talk about we're not interested in what or how much you used or who you're connecting with, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. And they start talking in the rooms about unconditional love. Like, okay, wait a minute, where's all my status going? I got to be just like everybody else? And in the beginning, that in itself was scary. Today, I'm so grateful for it. And it's one of those things that I pride myself on. My home group is primarily newcomers. And I spent all of my time trying to let them know that they're more important than I am. I try to make sure they get a clear, uncut message of Narcotics Anonymous. It's a lot of work sometimes. But I'm so grateful for those people who drilled that in me. You know, I moved about 7 years ago to a different area and was talking with some people from my old area yesterday, and they was asking me about, did I have any pictures of my family? And I'm going through my wallet trying to find pictures of my family, and I don't know if anybody else caught it, but I kind of went through some shame. Like, I couldn't find pictures of my family in my wallet. But my old sponsor, who's been dead for 8 years, I got two pictures of him because I carry him with me. You know, the fact that somebody was there and put up with all that crap and was willing to teach me how to live, it speaks monuments to me. Even today, sometimes, I feel like I am not worthy for the benefits this program has given me, for the blessings the God of my understanding has bestowed upon me. I've showed up, but I've done some work. And on most days, I'm okay with who I am. But in this process, it's real important to have some people in your life who can kind of nudge you on those bad days. We're all going to have them. You know, one of the things I made sure I didn't do was talk about coming here to do this, because I didn't want to allow myself to dwell on it too much, to stay in my head. I have a lot of network here at this convention today. And most of them didn't know I was going to be standing here the 5 minutes before it started. If they made it, they made it. If not, it's okay. This is not about me today. It's about us. You know, I could read on phrases forever and a day. How was that? Okay. And I guess that's a sign of being nervous, because normally I have a big mouth. People are usually telling me I'm hollering too much. But it's okay. It really is okay. Because, see, today, even though a lot of you I don't know personally, I know each and every person that sits in these rooms. I might not like you, but I love you. I've learned to hate your disease and love your recovery. See, these are the things that I was taught coming in. I didn't know any of this when I got here. You know, I can't go into any phrases without hitting what I consider to be the most important one. What is our message? The message is an addict. Any addict can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Our message is hope and the promise of freedom. It don't matter who you are or where you come from, what you have or what you don't have. Because believe me, when I came in here and I saw those people with time, and first of all, I thought they was lying because I didn't think it was possible for anybody to do it. And I knew I could. But I stayed. Like I said, I got to literature. I started studying literature. The area I got clean in, they used to go to a restaurant after every meeting. And I would strategically place myself where I could hear those people who I thought had something going on so I could figure out what the real secret of this program was. I wasn't coming here sharing anything. Actually, the first time I gave a lead, I still get flack about it almost 17 years later. My first lead was 5 minutes. I had nothing to say. But see, what I come to know today is all we got to do is stay around and do the work. We can all get this. I have nothing that's not available to anybody because everything I have is a direct result of this program. I hear a lot of people talk about they don't know where they would be without Narcotics Anonymous. Mine is real simple. I failed suicide. Without Narcotics Anonymous, believe me, the pain was going to continue, and I was going to keep trying until I got it right. I owe my life to this program. My old sponsor used to always tell me, for every day I have clean, I owe a day of service. That's why I show up. You know, there are so many addicts out there who never get the opportunity to get what we have today. I was like Danielle. When I got that email, oh, no. I don't want to do that. This is not my comfort zone. I can pin you up against the wall out there in the hall, and we can share back and forth 2 or 3 hours. I'm okay with that. But see, what I learned is that if I get more than one or two of y'all together, now the story has to be consistent. I can tell one thing and one something else, and we can keep it moving that way. See, when you come up here, you get raw. Everybody's going to know exactly who I am, whether I like it or not. But see, that's the only way we get help around here. See, today what I want is not just to be clean. I want to be at peace. I want to be able to not only love myself, but love someone else. What I want is recovery. Another one of those phrases that got me. We have observed some members who remain abstinent for long periods of time, whose dishonesty and self-defeat still prevented them from enjoying complete recovery and acceptance within society. Complete and continuous abstinence, however, is in close association and identification with others in NA groups. You know, it's great for an addict to be able to stop using. I would never say that clean time is not important, because for us, moment by moment, they're all important. But for me, simple abstinence is not enough. There were some things going on in my life long before I picked up that first one. And as soon as I put down that last one, all those things were back. And they had multiplied themselves over the years because our disease is progressive. If I wasn't willing to find out what was going on and do some damage control, this book also tells me that if I don't change, my clean date will. There is no reason why we can't come in here and get better, with the simple exception of fear. You want a clear room? Walk in the room and talk about change. We don't do that one real well. All the evidence was telling me how messed up my life was. But how dare you suggest I change? Let me try it my way one more time. you know, another one of my favorite phrases in here is, let's see if I can find it so I don't have to quote it. We do not have to understand this program for it to work. All we have to do is follow directions. I always micromanage everything. Every time my sponsor would give me a suggestion, my thing was why. And his answer was always the same thing. You said you wanted what I had. Because that's what it works and why, how and why it tells us. I'm sorry, how it works tells us. If you want what we have to offer, and are willing to make the effort to get it. So you've got to be willing. You know, Narcotics Anonymous has given me a life that is second to none. And I can say that without a new car in the driveway, without a new house, and no money in the bank. Because it's no longer about the material things that I thought was going to fix me. It's no longer about getting more. And Narcotics Anonymous has taught me how to get better. See, that's why I have to thank all the people who helped me. Everybody in this fellowship is a tool that I can use. Gratefully, most of you teach me what to do. Sadly, some of you teach me what not to do. But still, you're all very important to my life. Without the help of Narcotics Anonymous, both the program, which is our ledger, and the fellowship, I would be left once again to my own thinking, my own best ideas, and total destruction. Narcotics Anonymous can survive without me. But I cannot survive without it. If we had written down a list of expectations when we came into the program, we would have cheated ourselves. Hopeless living problems have become joyously changed. Our disease has been arrested, and now anything is possible. I remind people in my network on a regular basis. Anything that I'm lacking, anything that I desire, is possible. Because now I can show up. Now I can put some footwork toward arriving anywhere I want to arrive at. See, if I put one in me, all bets is off. I don't care what that one is. As long as we stay in this process, the sky's the limit. You can have or be anything you want to be in Narcotics Anonymous. See, we suffer from diseases of obsession and compulsion. Take the dope away and work some steps. That obsession becomes oneness of mind, a true focus. And that compulsion becomes undying commitment. With focus and commitment, we can do anything you want to do. When I was out there trying to cop, there was nothing that was going to stop me from getting that next one. Whether I had money or not, really irrelevant. Whether I owed the people I was going to cop for was irrelevant. Whether it was a raid going on, that was not going to stop me from going and getting what I needed to get. Because in an active addiction, it was not a want, it was a need. See, in recovery, I have been taught those things that I need today. Yes, I have a lot of wants, and I don't even sweat them. On occasions, I get some of the things that I want. But I'm willing to put the work in to get the things that I need. See, it's real important for me to continue to live this way of life. Since the beginning of our recovery, we have found that joy doesn't come from material things, but from within ourselves. We find that we can lose self-obsession. We are able to understand what it means to be happy, joyous, and free. Indescribable joy comes from sharing from the heart. We no longer need to lie to gain acceptance. You know, for somebody who comes from a place that wanted to kill themselves, not only am I able to love you today, but today I love me. Today I love me to the point where I'm no longer hurting me, and I'm not going to allow you to hurt me. That caused me to make a lot of changes, ongoing changes in my life. Because, see, that daily inventory process is really about, am I doing things that are conducive for the way that I want to live my life? And do I have people in my life that are helping me along that way? You know, like I say, I love all our literature. But just for today, it puts it real simple. It puts it so simple that you know, that there's really nothing else we need to add to it or take away from it. Just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Those people believed in me long before I did. They gave me the push forward that I could do it. And they supported me every single step of the way. You know, I've had several sponsors in this process. I've recovered in several different areas. I have a network of people all over this country and several other countries. This is somebody who, even at the dope house, they weren't telling me to come back. We were involved in the hurricane that hit our area over the last week. I had family members calling to see if I was all right. It scared me to death to see their names come up on the caller ID. Because I'm not in a close-knit biological family. When I see family members calling, they're like, okay, they're calling to give me bad news. I'm going to wait to call them back because I got to get spiritually fit to handle the bad news they're about to give me. And when I called them to ask me if I was all right, I broke down. They checking on me. As a direct result of Narcotics Anonymous, from over 1,000 miles away, I have kindled those loving relationships that I destroyed. Narcotics Anonymous offers us so much more than a life without drugs. You know, one of my pet peeves is I always want people to work the steps. I always want people to define the freedom I found in this program. And I finally have to accept that everybody here doesn't want what I want. And I have to love them where they are and accept them where they are. But that's not going to stop me from telling anybody that wants more out of their recovery. It's real simple to get it. I'm not going to promise you it's going to be easy, but it's simple. Get with some members who are living this program. And they will guide you through our literature. That's another great thing about our literature. You know, we're a bunch of well-intentioned addicts. This is why I'm standing here with all these tabs in this book. Because I like to consider myself to be a basic text quoting person. I don't want to give you misinformation off the top of my head. I would rather spend the time to give you exactly what's in here because I know several people here are not going to go home to find it for themselves. And I don't want you walking out of here believing that I've quoted something. It's been a misquote on my part. See, the day when my sponsor gives me direction, I can go home and find it in the literature. I can figure out where that direction came from. This is about getting better. As a direct result of us working to get better, we reduce the option of using life on life's terms. Life on life's terms shows up because it's coming. It's always coming. We're going to have good days and bad days, and that's just the way it is. I would rather take my good days and do some preventive maintenance, get some information, and get some tools so when the storm comes, I'm prepared. Than to sit around here living off my clean time. And when the storm comes, I trade it all in for just one more. This program is a precious gift, and I don't take it lightly. I love this fellowship because they love me back to life. You know, I love those who were here before me, who did the work and paved the way. I love those who came behind me because I was able to see them as they unfolded and blossomed. It allowed me to see how the program worked. See, I know by you sitting in a basic text workshop, you share that love. Because, see, there's so many other places that you could find to be. When we show up to workshops about literature, about steps, about improving our life, we're trying to move on to that next level, whatever that level might be. As we develop faith in our daily lives, we find that our higher power supplies us with the strength and the guidance that we need. I wouldn't be standing here without it. The idea of me standing once again in front of a room full of people to tell them who I am is still terrifying. When I'm at a point in my life where I have no secrets, somebody knows it all, but I'm still not ready to tell the world. But if my showing up can help somebody else, then once again, I have no choice. See, our literature talks about this. It's not whether we're going to share the message, it's when. We have to give this away in order to keep it. Our recovery is strengthened when we share it with somebody else, because not only does it remind us of what we've come through, but it also reminds us of the things that we need to be doing on a regular basis. And I love sponsorship. I love my sponsees as much as I do my sponsor. Because, see, I'm not one of those good sharing addicts who's going to give advice that I haven't first applied in my life. It's not about me giving advice. It's about me sharing my experience. If they call and I don't have experience, I got a network of phone numbers. Well, I'm not sure about that, but let me call my sponsor. Let me call one of my sponsee brothers. Let's go down the phone list. I used to always hear, if you don't know what to do, don't do anything. I don't have to just don't do anything. If I don't know what to do, I'm going to ask somebody. And I'm going to keep asking somebody until I get some direction. That direction might be, you just need to sit still. Then I'll be willing to do that. But today I'm not trying to lead and run my own life, live by my own devices. because I know the things that I did to me. I would love to be able to stand here and blame any one of y'all for the things that I've done in my life. I did these things to me. I effectively destroyed my life all by myself. So you would think, okay, I destroyed it by myself. I ought to be able to put it back together by myself. Not. It's taken this fellowship with Narcotics Anonymous to help me put it back together a day at a time. And that can only happen if I'm willing to let somebody know what's going on with me. And some days, it's difficult to do that. You know, I would love to tell you that I'm one of the people I call my sponsor every day. I would love to even tell you I call my sponsor every week. But guess what? If something's going on with me, he's going to know it. I might call him, but I will probably send him a text message. I'm going to do what I need to do to put it out there. Because what happens is, like anything else in my life, you know, I'm real quick to go out and destroy some things. When it comes down to repairing it, I want to kind of ease into it, kind of test the waters first. I don't want to jump all the way in yet. Because I might not want to get into the solution. I'm not one of those people who's going to hold the meeting hostage to call my entire network about some things I'm not willing to do any work on. When we're ready to do the work, there are people that will help us. So many phrases. And grateful to have them. When we do something wrong, a fellow addict helps us by showing us what we cannot see. If you don't have those people in your life who know what's going on with you, see, even in recovery, I find that when I think that I'm doing the best, when I think everything is okay, it is usually just the opposite. See, I have members who help me to identify what's going on with me. I have members in this fellowship who love me enough to tell me exactly what I don't want to hear. I would rather for you to tell me the truth and help me to live than to co-sign my BS and help me die. Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't come here because I was trying to make friends. I didn't come here because I had some friends already here that I was attached to by the hip, you know, because I find it a lot of times I end up showing up for places that I had made plans to go with several other addicts, and I end up going by myself because I didn't come here on a buddy system. I have to be willing to go to any lengths for my recovery, because I'm 100% responsible for my recovery. It ain't my sponsor's fault that we didn't go over the step. It's mine. It's not my sponsor's fault if I didn't go to the meeting. It's mine. People are here to help me, but it's my responsibility to do the work. Maybe this is why I quote so much. It's easier to quote things than it is to find them. For us to use is to die. Often in more ways than one. One of our biggest stumbling blocks in recovery seems to be in the realm, and it seems to be, one of our biggest stumbling blocks in recovery seems to be placing unrealistic expectations on ourselves and others. Relationships can be a painful area. We tend to fantasize and project what will happen. We get angry and resentful if our fantasies are not fulfilled. We forget that we are powerless over other people. See, it's not about the other person. It's my perception. It's my expectations. It's my demands. It's my lack of acceptance. You know, I hate meetings all the time. Relationships can be a painful area. Nobody bothers to read why. We don't do relationships well. We're control freaks. We want to be right all the time. We want people to do what we want them to do. And then you wonder why you're having a hard time in your relationship? Our first relationship has to be with us, with our higher power, with our sponsor, with our networks, those people who want to point out those other areas of our life that we need to do some work on before we go out and take hostages. See, today I know who I am as a direct result of the steps. The steps aren't designed to make me perfect. The steps make me aware. Like, okay, now that I know I got this defect, do I want to let it go? God of my understanding is not taking anything from me that I'm not willing to release. But if we don't do the work, we don't know what they are. If we don't share with other people, we don't get the experience of how to get to the other side. Narcotics Anonymous gives us all these benefits. All we got to do is show up and ask for them. Show up and do some work. You know, I'm real grateful to be a member of this fellowship. I'm real grateful to have so many people who love me. And I'm grateful for the blood, the sweat, and the tears that went into our literature. And believe me, I could stand here for the next 2 or 3 hours talking about the phrases that helped to change me. But I think you got the general idea. Narcotics Anonymous, in its entirety, contains phrases that changed me. Y'all gave me hope when there was none. Y'all took somebody who wanted to die on a regular basis, somebody who's loving life, and go out of my way every day of my life trying to help somebody else to find what I found in here. I'm so grateful to be a part of this fellowship. I'm grateful to stand here. I hope somebody got something that they can apply in their life to help you move forward. Because, see, that's the only reason I show up at conventions and events of this nature. It's not about going to see the old friends. It's not about finding that dynamic speaker. It's about getting some information that I can apply in my life. Because if I came all the way to California and I go back to North Carolina being the same person with the same crap that I left here from, left there with, I wasted a trip and a lot of money. I come here to get some things that will help me to be better. That's what recovery is to me. It's an active change. My addiction is not about drugs. It's my thinking and my behaviors. If I don't change my thinking and behaviors, yes, it will be about drugs again. But for the last 17 years, I haven't found it necessary to lie to myself and say that just one more would fix me. I'm real grateful to be here. I thank all of you for coming. I'm Addict Man Michael. I will keep coming back.